our work has had a happy result. But I want to stress that the effort would have been worth making regardless of the outcome of this trip. Risk of failure should never deter us from a worthy goal, and no goal is higher than that of genuine peace. In war, we offer our very lives as a matter of routine, and we must be no less daring, no less steadfast in the pursuit of peace. For more than 30 years, the nations of Egypt and Israel, who have been and who will be perpetual neighbors, have existed in a continual state of hostility. That hostility has exploded into combat 4 times, and each war has brought with it suffering and pain and the loss of life, renewed fear and hatred, and great danger for that entire region and for the world far beyond. But in the last 16 months, the way has finally been opened to peace. When I decided to make this trip, the peace negotiations, as you know, seemed to have reached a stalemate. After long hours of discussion in both Egypt and in Israel, proposals were made for resolving all the outstanding issues. All but 2 of these issues have been resolved with Prime Minister Begin and the Israeli cabinet. Less than 3 hours from now, the Prime Minister will present the remaining proposals to the Israeli cabinet for consideration. I have even left instructions to wake me up if the news is good. And I believe it will be. As you also know, President Sadat has already accepted all of the proposals. Therefore, we have now defined the major components of a peace treaty between the largest and most powerful Arab country, Egypt, and her neighbor and former enemy, Israel. There may be sharp internal debates before this process is complete, but the treaty that emerges can be the cornerstone of a comprehensive settlement, one that can bless with peace all the people who have suffered from the long enduring conflict in the Middle East. The leaders of Egypt and Israel are now daring to break the pattern of bitterness and war. They are following the advice of the biblical proverb, when a man's way please the Lord, he maketh even his enemies to be at peace with him. In choosing peace, President Sadat and the Prime Minister of Israel, Prime Minister Begin, are venturing into the unknown. But they know that the United States of America will be with them as they begin to make peace a living reality for their own people. I'm thankful that the friendships between their countries, both countries, and the United States will now grow even stronger when our own 2 friends are friends with one another. Through private messages and public statements, many messages sent from Air Force One on the trip back here from Egypt, I am urging all other world leaders to support what Egypt and Israel have done, for it offers hope to all who love peace everywhere in the world. My friends, let me thank you again for coming out to greet us. I believe that God has answered our prayers.
Well, the President has now concluded those really quite emotional remarks. He was obviously moved by the reception. He knew, of course, that there was going to be a crowd out there to greet him. He's been in touch with congressional leaders. He talked, as a matter of fact, by telephone with Tip O'Neill and with Senator Burr just a very short while after leaving Cairo to give them a report on what had happened. We want to call in once again now our correspondent, David Garcia, who was on board Air Force One during this long, long journey. And David, even though the president did not come back to talk to reporters, and as I gathered from what you said earlier, he didn't encourage his staff assistants to do that either. Still, it must have been a pretty happy airplane.
Indeed, Frank. There was an air of jubilation aboard Air Force One. Immediately upon boarding, President Carter shed his suit coat, wandered through the front section of the plane in shirt sleeves, his tie down, shaking hands with members of his staff, with Secretary of State Vance, with Defense Secretary Harold Brown. He went away very shortly, and then members of the staff hoisted the toasts to one another. At one point, a reporter flashed a thumbs-up sign to Secretary of State Vance. The Secretary gave the same sign in return. Indeed, an air of jubilation aboard Air Force One.
Well, it's easy to understand, and it's almost incredible, David. You were there all along during this entire journey. Just think back to only yesterday, the President said, you know, in that speech to the Knesset, that the leaders of the two countries were not yet ready for peace, though the people were. Tonight he very carefully paid tribute to Prime Minister Begin and to President Sadat. What a turnaround. What a fantastic turnaround.
That very moment, Frank, was considered very significant among us following the negotiations as they went along. President Carter publicly chiding the leaders of the two countries,
yes,
telling them that the people are ready, but they're not yet willing to take that chance. Very significant for the president to do that in a public speech right there in Israel. Of course, we don't know exactly what in those proposals produced this turnaround. And once again, U.S. officials on the plane very reluctant to say anything at all. As one put it, you do not have a treaty until it is signed. The attitude, obviously, they don't want to do anything at this point, not anything to rock the boat and get this back off the track.
That's right, but of course they want to get it going fast too, don't they, David? I mean, the Knesset is going to meet, or the cabinet, as the president said, in just a few hours. The prime minister said today that he's going to go to the full Knesset next week. It reminds me of, you know, when Camp David ended. He brought them down from the mountaintop in a hurry and put them on television so that the world could see them shaking hands right away, make them committed to that, to the framework for peace that was signed there. And now, of course, if he can do the same thing to the actual treaty, that will be something.
And reports are rampant at this point, Frank, about a signing ceremony, where it will take place and exactly when. Before boarding Air Force One, we asked the president, where's the signing going to be? And he shot back, we'll tell you later.
Well, let me tell you, David, I don't mean to interrupt you, but very shortly after you boarded Air Force One, Barbara was sitting with Prime Minister Begin, and he said there are going to be three ceremonies, one in Cairo, one in Jerusalem, but the first one will be in Washington, where they will sign the English language version of the treaty. And he said, is this possible? I'm giving some news to a man who has just ridden back across the ocean with the president. He said, David, that it could happen by the end of next week.
Yes. Very definitely. Reports circulating there in Cairo that the signing ceremony could indeed happen next week. In fact, President Carter was talking to the Egyptian ambassador, Ashraf Gorbal, before getting on Air Force One. The president talking about ceremonies in the White House, things we were able to overhear, also arrangements being made. So the process is very definitely going forward, but of course, the ingredient right now is that the Knesset, the cabinet even, has yet to approve these documents, these proposals, and we must remember what the President said here at Andrews Air Force Base tonight. A new element introduced. There are two unresolved issues that Israel has yet to approve, that Prime Minister Begin has yet to approve. So it's not all locked up yet. Of course, it looks a lot better than it did last night in Cairo.
Well, two issues, you say, oil and the Gaza, or the business about Gaza, yes, not completely wrapped up. But, Herb?
The President is climbing aboard his helicopter now, which will airlift him about the 10 minutes to the White House, where he will be able to be alone at last, with a big load apparently off his shoulders, at least for a while, although Dave keeps stressing the it isn't official until it's signed.
And they're not going to do a thing to get this back off the track. President Carter, in his remarks here, very general, you noticed, saying nothing at all about the substance of the proposals themselves, and making no great claims that he was able to pull it off or that anyone pulled it off. Just an attitude of thanks to everyone involved that it indeed has happened.
Dave, there was a reference to two remaining issues here tonight. Are they substantial issues?
Well, President Carter has insisted that the remaining differences compared to what has already been accomplished are very, very small. But I don't think there's any question now that these remaining differences could actually prove to be the toughest.
The flickering lights of the helicopter, the characteristic white-topped helicopter, which is a presidential helicopter.
President Carter heading back to the White House, where he will have what's described as a rather routine schedule for the rest of the week. I would imagine that schedule will include an awful lot of sleep. Negotiations, particularly in Israel, were almost round the clock. Very few people getting anything anywhere near what you could call rest. And President Carter now heading back to the White House. Frank?
David, thank you very much. You head on home. You haven't had much of an opportunity for rest, too, I know. And thank you, too, Herb Kaplow. Well, there's the lights of Marine One. The Marines run the helicopters around the White House, ready to take the President now back home after this long, this fateful, this most momentous journey that ended in apparent triumph, as the President said tonight in his speech, expressing his gratitude not only to the people who had come out there to meet him, but to all the people who had given him support, hope, people in Egypt and in Israel. Let us hope indeed that this turns out to have been a triumphal homecoming. Well, we'll have more details on this fast-breaking story on Good Morning America this morning and on World News tonight, much later. This is Frank Reynolds in New York.